You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf alongside Nick Reitz, Kevin Wilds, Greg Jennings is with us. Gentlemen, hope you had a very nice weekend. Coming up on a very rainy, it is rainy, rainy Monday morning here in New York City. In an unprecedented move, Tom Brady finally did something corny, and it's got Nick thrilled.
I'll tell you what that is.
Also, Jameis is willing to... We are starting the show like that, Wilds. Jameis is willing to be a backup. Cam is not, and Joe Burrow's making some headlines. We'll wait on the Tom Brady story for you, Wilds. We will start with Burrow. Here we go. Joe Burrow is coming off a perfect 15-0 season where he won a national championship and the Heisman. But next week, he could be drafted first overall to a Bengals team, coming off a 2-14 season, a team that hasn't had a winning season in 4 years. And this weekend, the overwhelming favorite to go number one turned some heads by saying, quote, "I just want to go somewhere where I can win." Nick, of everything that you've heard from Joe Burrow over the course of the last couple of weeks, you think Burrow wants to play for the Cincinnati Bengals?
No. And I don't blame him at all. I want to take a step back here for a moment. Listen, the draft is a somewhat absurd construct we've all just accepted. For all three of our major sports, the highest of high achievers at the amateur level get somewhat randomly assigned to a city they have no choice in for the next 7 years of their life, and they're just all supposed to like it and love it. So that's not realistic. But the draft is the system that we have, and the fans seem to like it, so it's going to stay in place. But Joe Burrow has done everything aside from create a homemade sign that says, "Please, someone trade up for me." And we got to take him at his word or at his lack of words. This all started back in January when he told our friend Dan Patrick, "You want to go number one, but you also want to go to a great organization that is committed to winning." It's kind of like saying, "I kind of want Chinese, but I also want Italian." You got to pick one of the two. He knew Cincinnati had the number one pick then. He also then in February said, "Whoever wants to pay me to play football, I'll play for them." He also hired Jordan Palmer to train him the day after Carson Palmer said, "I would never want to go to the Bengals if I were Joe Burrow." Carson Palmer, of course, who was the number one overall pick who went to the Bengals, which takes us to this quote from Shaq's podcast, where once again, he has ample opportunity to say, "I'm from Ohio. They have the number one pick. It's perfect." And instead, he hedges it. "I want to get drafted to a good team, good organization that's maximizing my talents. I've won everywhere I've been. I've never had a losing season. I'm not a loser. I just want to go somewhere I can win." Wilds, I don't think Joe Burrow is threatening not to play. In fact, he's made it very clear he's not going to threaten not to play. But at no point has Joe Burrow said, I think I'm the best player. My hometown team's got the number one pick. Sounds perfect to me. Excited to be a Bengal. I'd be disappointed if I'm not." I don't think I'm reading between the lines. I think I'm reading the lines that Burrow hopes someone trades up so he doesn't have to be a Bengal.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point, Nick. I feel like he could come right out and say it. And I'm not 100% sure why he's not. Maybe he's just hedging his bet a little bit. The other quote that I loved is where he just said, like, "I'm not a loser." He was like on his DJ Khaled, like, "All I do is win." And we had our researcher, Dusty, look it up. He said the last time Joe Burrow lost a game was November 24th, 2018 at Texas A&M. The guy is on a killer winning streak here. And I wonder, the subplot of that I took from this podcast is how he's going to deal with all the losing that's coming Cincinnati's way. So, and I have a story about parenting and kids in general. When you have kids, you know that there's some big days coming up for you. You know, you got birthdays and graduations and their wedding. I've got a new day, and it's a day that everyone remembers. I'm calling it Ivan Drago Day. Ivan Drago Day is the day where you look at your kid and they're on a huge winning streak. Like, my kid's been winning basketball. He's got a 200-game winning streak going. And you just look at them on today's Ivan Drago Day. You say, I must break you. Today is the day you have to learn to lose. And you make one more shot. And the kid's like, what? What just happened? It's like, yes, this is the real world. That's the world that Joe Burrow is going into. If we could put up the Bengals schedule, the Fox bet over-under, I think it's 5.5. Nick, they could go 0-for here. There's not, like, obvious games. Let's assume they lose all their away games. You think the Browns are going to lose? Maybe Jacksonville thinks they're going to lose? No other team thinks they're going to lose. 0-16 is on the board for the Bengals and Joe Burrow. So I think losing is underrated. And I think Joe Burrow is in for a sort of a rough ride in Cincinnati, Jenna.
Greg, jump in here. What do you think Joe Burrow really wants?
He said it. He wants to win. He wants to go to an organization that has proven that they can win, that they will utilize his abilities and his talents to the best. And if I'm a player and I'm potentially going to be the number one overall draft pick, I could say all these things too. However, you have to understand it is out of your control. And he knows that. And I think the one thing that Joe Burrow is really trying to do and convey is to any team that potentially wants and needs a quarterback, trade up for that number one pick.
Wow.
The yes. Miami Dolphins, yes. If they don't feel like Tua's their guy, like the Jaguars, like these, the Lions, teams like that who are right there, but they can trade up. That's all he's really trying to do, and I think he's doing a great job. However, I would caution him because it is Ohio, and you look at what LeBron James did with Cleveland being the number one overall draft pick out of high school to the Cleveland Cavaliers, a franchise who had won in however many years, and look what he was able to do, but he embraced that role. If he was willing to embrace it, he would be endeared forever in the state of Ohio and in the city of Cincinnati. I don't think he really cares about that, but we will see.
Nick, if the Bengals feel the way Greg said Joe Burrow probably feels, like, hey, message to all the other teams, if you need a quarterback, feel free to trade up. Should the Bengals even care? Should they care about what Joe Burrow wants?
No. I mean, unfortunately for Joe, like Greg mentioned, he has no say in it. And no, they shouldn't care. And because of the way it works in the NFL, you draft a guy in the first round, you have him for 5 years, you can franchise him 2 more years after that. So it's 7 years until he would have freedom of movement. But I want to circle back to Greg's point about LeBron, because I want to make this clear. I'm not attacking Joe Burrow here. I know that I said I'd take Tua number one. I got to know Joe a little bit. I think he's a super sharp kid, and I think he's going to be a good player. I like him a lot. I don't think it's a negative he doesn't want to go to Cincinnati, but I think it's pretty obvious he doesn't want to go to Cincinnati. I'm going to read you one more quote. The quote is this. I'm staying in Ohio, and I'm real excited. I'm not going to guarantee a championship, but I will guarantee we'll get better every day. We're going to be a lot better than last year, end quote. That was LeBron James the day the Cavs won the draft lottery. Not when they drafted him, the day they won the draft lottery. He's like, boom, staying in Ohio, I already know it. I'm the number one pick. You know it, I know it. We have heard nothing close to that, Wilds, from Joe Burrow, and I don't think it's reaching to say it's because he does want to entice another team to trade up and come get him.
Then why doesn't he just say it, Nick? Why doesn't, like, it's the fence sitting. You want him to just either go one way or the other. Do you think this is actually getting the message, or behind the scenes, is that the message that you think is going out?
Well, I'll kick this to you, Greg. I think the reason he doesn't just say it is you say it and you get labeled. Then he's a diva. He's a character. Yeah. He walks into the league with all this baggage. So, Greg, I think he's saying it without saying it. And I don't know what you think, but giving himself some plausible deniability here, Greg.
100% agreed, Nick. This is the perfect instance where you don't say what you really want, because you have to potentially go in that locker room with a bunch of guys that you're going to have to create relationships with and then convince that I can lead you to win, to turn this organization around. You don't go into a situation where you've pretty much burned every bridge and you've knocked over everything in the cupboards. Like, that is not how he wants to approach it. I think it's smart. He and everyone knows how he really feels.
All right. Well, important to note, the NFL virtual draft now just 10 days away. This will all sort itself out on April 23rd. We got to take a break. Coming up, is Tampa Brady about to reunite Gronk in Tampa Bay?
Oh, my God.
That will make a lot more sense on First Things First.
It'll never make sense.
Back here, First Things First, time to play Drawing a Blank. So over the weekend, Tom Brady tweeted, "I never understood why Drew wasn't making Drew Orleans t-shirts," which made more sense when the story broke that Brady would be filing trademarks for his new slogans, Tampa Bay and Tampa Brady. Probably the only reason he signed with the Bucs. Nick, warm weather Tom filing trademarks for two new slogans is blank.
On brand, because Brady's brand is corny. Now, that's not a bad thing. It's almost lovable. It's like, oh, he's so focused on football, he doesn't even know what cool is. He just eats avocado toast and watches football, eats film and practices his throwing motion. But, okay, my apologies. But here's the thing. Listen, I wasn't a marketing major at Syracuse, but I took a few classes, and I'm also not a copyright lawyer. However, I've always been led to believe, Greg Jennings, you copyright things that you are afraid someone else might use or take. Spoiler alert, Tom, ain't nobody trying to use Tampa Brady or Tampa Bay or whatever Tampa Brady thing you were. You could have had those and print on the printing press. No copyright needed. So, Greg, I say it's on brand because his brand is corny at this point. That's not a bad thing, but it's what it is, Greg.
It's on brand, but it's money, 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 money.
There you go, Greg.
Money. Look, Nick, what you got to understand is a guy like Tom Brady, who brings in this type of mystique, this type of just notoriety, automatically, without having played a football game, without even having put on the uniform, he understands there are going to be vendors, there are going to be so many other people that are going to try to make money off of whatever and however they can, that typically being a player's name and likeness. And so he's just doing what any and everyone else is going to try to do, and he's beating them to the punch. I love it. Why allow someone else to do what you could have done yourself?
Yeah, Jenna, this is. I thought it was a little disappointing because when I saw the graphic, it was just a T-shirt. I didn't see any button downs or mud flaps that I could get for Father's Day for my dad's truck. Maybe full car wraps that I could drive around town in. I think it was disappointing that I only saw T-shirts out there. Stuff for Nick. I could get you some gifts. Send them to you and your whole family. They would love them. I also want, since we're talking about puns now, I just wanted to put it out there. Cam New England Ton, still available. Again, the same routine, button downs, mud flaps, car wraps, whatever we need, Jenna.
Oh, boy.
So I'm going to put that paperwork in today for the Cam stuff.
I gotta end by responding to Greg about other. You're worried that other people are going to make money. Let the people who need the money make the money. Tom is set for many, many generations. All right, we got to move on. Sticking with Tampa Brady.
Ain't nobody making money on Tampa Bay. It's $0. $0 ever going to be made on this.
All right. How about this? According to Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio, Bruce Arians is actually the perfect coach to get Rob Gronkowski to come out of retirement. You knew that was coming. Nick, a Brady Gronk reunion on the Bucs would be blank.
I think it's likely. Here's the thing.
Wow.
The Patriots hold Gronk's rights, but they've got no cap space at all. And so if Gronk unretires, what I think is very likely is that the Patriots either release him from his obligation or try to trade him, get something back for him. I don't think, and Gronk would only unretire to play with Brady. So if he does want to play football, our star producer Ketta showed me before the show, Tampa Bay Stadium's only 90-minute drive from the WWE Performance Center. Bruce Arians might let him double dip in both sports. So I think it's on the board. I think it's likely that Gronk is really considering this and that we see a Brady-Gronk reunion in Tampa, Greg.
This is real-life fantasy football. This is not going to happen. Gronkowski is done.
Oh, cold water, Greg.
This idea that anyone could just walk away from the game of football or professional sport for a year, maybe even two, and then come back and just insert themselves. Look, it's a reason why guys don't do it every single year, because it's hard to do. I like the idea, but it won't happen.
Okay. Yeah, a few things. One, if this happens, sign me up. Sign me up 100%. Tampa Bay Wilds, warm weather Wilds is here. Even rolls off the tongue nicely. I would be a huge Buccaneers fan if this happens. Also, I'd like to start a rumor. Coldwater Greg. Greg has been working out a lot. Check his Instagram. Thinking about a comeback. Greg Jennings. Thinking about a comeback. Suit up, Greg. No. We're ready for you.
There you go, Greg.
Be great for the show. It'd be wonderful. Greg's back.
No, the only hits he wants right now are from Nick. I don't think he wants anything more physical than that. Moving on, 3 weeks after Brady replaced Jameis Winston in Tampa, the 26-year-old quarterback still on the open market. A recent report has Jameis looking at options for backup jobs. Nick, besides, that ain't great. Jameis Winston as a backup quarterback would be blank.
Here we go.
Obvious. I'll be totally honest here. I am so confused how Jameis and Cam are being lumped into like the same, hey, two quarterbacks available, two former number one overall picks. It's like one guy is, when healthy, really, really good. The other guy just had your first 30 for 30 season in NFL history and is just a turnover machine. Of course Jameis should be looking for a backup quarterback job. Unless he's going to go to a different league, and unfortunately the XFL just had to be temporarily suspended because of coronavirus, there ain't options for it. So the only place he could start is out of the NFL. So it's obvious, like, maybe one day he'll rebuild his value, but when the season ended with a pick six for pick number 30, Greg, of course he's gonna have to go be a backup somewhere. It's obvious to me.
Yeah, I got him as an ace in the hole. And for all of us who've been at home, we've been quarantined, we've been playing a lot of card games, board games, and what have you. And if you're familiar with the game of spades, and typically the way I play spades, extra books, joker, joker, deuce, deuce. If I get that big joker and I open my hand and I see I got that big joker, and then I look down and I see I got an ace is good, but it's like it's not guaranteeing me a book. You know what I mean? So that's kind of how the teams are looking at Jameis Winston. He's good, but he's not guaranteeing wins because of what he provides while being good. He's just as bad. So he's an ace in the hole. He's a good option to have, but not the best.
Jenna, I'm going to go with bad Wi-Fi. I think Jameis needs to just do less on social media. 2 weeks ago, he was seen pushing a truck. And it's like, wow, Jameis is pushing a truck. And everyone's like, huh? Well, why are you pushing a truck? And then this weekend, the video, it felt like an old video, but it was out. It was Jameis with a football avoiding one of those huge boxing, like Miley Cyrus wrecking ball things. And he's moving around like, this is not working. This is not working. Just do less. Hang out. Just be like, hey, guys, I got LASIK. I can see now. I promise I won't throw any interceptions. And that will be a better path than these weird internet videos that he's releasing.
Can I throw something out there? How about sign in Tampa Bay?
Yeah.
Be a backup for 2 years. Then maybe you could be a starter one day. Just a thought. All right. Moving on to the Chiefs now.
Oh.
How about that, Nick? The Chiefs looking more and more like a little deja vu from the defending champs. KC currently returning 20 of their 22 Super Bowl starters next season. I had to look up that number again. It seemed unbelievable, but 20 of 22 are returning next season. Nick, your Chiefs are looking to be the first team to repeat since the 2004 New England Patriots hangover.
Oh, Patriots.
I don't know why that gets me every time. Nick, the Chiefs are returning 20 of 22 starters. Next season is blank.
All right, I have a lot to say. I apologize. First, Greg Jennings, that is the absolute right way to play spades. And I really like the fact that you pointed out if you play Joker, Joker, Deuce, Deuce, the Ace of Spades, only the fifth best card in the deck. People always overvalue it. So great job by you. You can be my spades partner anytime. Second of all, America, Jenna keeps saying hangover when she talks about the Chiefs. It's also apropos because during quarantine, Jenna's been just drinking Moscato every night doing the show hungover. Now, to answer these questions, Jenna Wolf. All right, I would like, listen.
This guy is just...
There are so many words I could say. Serendipitous.
It's crazy.
You know what I mean? Sublime. But I'm an unbiased journalist. Right? That's what I'm here for. No fandom. No, ignore the background. So the Chiefs returning 20 of 22 starters is unfair. I love the NFL. We need the NFL back. We need sports back. One of the great things about the NFL, Greg, is the intrigue, the unknown, the uncertainty of who's going to be crowned champion. And therefore, I'm calling on Roger Goodell to step in here and remove a few of these starters. I don't know how you're going to do it. Force a trade. Do a la David, the late David Stern with the Chris Paul veto something. Because if 20 of 22 are coming back, we're running it back, Greg Jennings. And it, sorry, I have to be unbiased. And it would be unfair, Greg, to the rest of the NFL.
This is, I almost shouldn't even go. I just want to continue to listen to Nick. But this is scary for the league. This is scary for anyone that is going to try to oppose this team. This is unheard of. Like, in the National Football League, 20 of 22 of your starters, like starters, not just start. This is unreal. And Nick, I agree with you. If there was another word I would choose, it would be unfair, but it's scary because they're the only way they lose is if they beat themselves, period. I just don't see it happening. Hey, look, wild. You can be upset all you want. The only way that everybody talks about this.
They were losing for most of the Super Bowl. They were losing for 90% of the Super Bowl.
This is a young team. This is a young team with a young leader. They're not going to be hungover. Get over that Super Bowl hangover stuff. Stop it.
All right. All right, Nick. I think this is bad for this show. And I'm going to pose a question to you. Remember you did that TV personality quiz? Like, which TV character are you?
Yeah.
Or which movie character? Yep. Can you run through the characters that you got?
Oh, I was so happy with who I got. I got the little guy from Game of Thrones that everyone loves. I got my favorite character from The Wire. I'd have to look it up. You're throwing me off. But I did awesome on that TV game show quiz. I'm going to find it for you, Wilds, because I think I got the best list possible. I got Tyrion Lannister.
You did.
Tony Stark. I got Bruce Wayne. Yes. I loved it. Yep. Those are me. Correct. Confirmed.
Okay. All right. Now, if on the posters of those movies, can you show me the face that those characters usually make?
Is it an improv troupe now? I don't know.
Yeah, you go like this. They're like this. It's a lot of this. That's your role on this show. It's very analytical. It's very like furrowed brow. You can't be like Mr. Happy. The Chiefs are winning. We're the best. It's terrible for the show if that becomes your character. If you become like, you know, Woody Harrelson in Cheers, you're like, hey, everybody, it's me. That's not your character. I think it's bad for the show if the Chiefs win. Bad for the show is what I'm going for.
Well, listen, I agree, and I know we have to go. I'll be quick here. I agree, Wilds. When they cast the show, that is what they anticipated happening. But much like when they cast Breaking Bad, I don't think they thought Tyrion Lannister, the little person who was like the nephew of the king, was going to become the star. But roles change. You were cast to be the happy Patriot fan. But the Patriots are going to stink now, and they're not going to be that relevant, so you're going to have to find Tampa Brady to jump onto. And I was supposed to be the analytical guy whose team never wins. But now my team is never going to stop winning. It's going to be so glorious, which is why, Jenna, it's unfair to the rest of the league.
All right. We got to take a break. As much as I want to hear more about how much you think the Chiefs will win, is Cam Newton the perfect fit to replace Tom Brady in New England? Wilds files his trademark next.
Now I'm
first
back.
Things first. Welcome back. We're talking a little Cam Newton this morning. The former MVP still on the open market with the Patriots consistently in the conversation. But our friends over at Fox Bet give New England just the fourth best odds to land Cam behind the Chargers, the Dolphins, and the Jacksonville Jaguars. Nick, factoring fit and style, does Cam make sense for the New England Patriots?
Yeah, he makes a ton of sense for the New England Patriots. And people say fit and style, and I understand that, but what is the Patriots' style or system post-Brady? It's a blank canvas. It's not like you have a bunch of entrenched star receivers that have to play a certain way. You don't even really have an offensive system that you have to do a certain way. You can meld that, as the best coaches do, to the talent. So could Jared Stidham run a very, very poor man's version of Tom Brady's offense? Sure. But if I'm the Patriots, I'd rather a different style of offense that, by the way, is not that different than what they like to do, which is run the ball. Now you'd have a quarterback who can run it with a far more talented quarterback in Cam Newton. Wilds, the only part of this that doesn't make sense is me, my part of it. Because if Cam Newton goes to the Patriots, I'm going to find myself rooting for the Patriots at times next year. And that's something I am not comfortable with. But yeah, I mean, if you're a Pats fan, and you obviously are, I would desperately want Cam Newton over the Stidham-Hoyer combo. To me, that's obvious.
I love it, because if you start rooting for the Patriots, a commutative property, you would also have to root for Tampa Bay. So it would be this odds kind of like triangle of rooting interest for you.
No, I would.
Look, I'll take Cam any way possible. I think we're thinking long term with Cam. Hey, Cam comes up to Foxborough, gets his number retired in 10 years. I'm all for that. I'm also all for the other side of things. Cam, come up 1 year. Give it a shot. Redo your deal. Come in. Have a big resurgence year. Sound familiar to anybody? Boom. Randy Moss had 3 touchdowns with the Raiders. Bill Belichick, hey, why don't you come over to Foxborough? Then what happens? 23 touchdowns. Start setting records. I'm okay with Cam coming just for 1 year. Here's the other thing we like to think about. Matt Castle, one-year wonder. Won 11 games, threw for 3,500 yards. Then what happens? Goes over to Kansas City. Nick Wright's doing radio. 6 years, $62 million. Next thing you know, Nick Wright is online buying those big head Matt Castle shirts. He's got the Matt Castle posters in his room. Just loves it. Matt Castle pens while he's on his Kansas City radio. So I'm either way, I'm good. Nick can become a Patriots fan. Matt Castle, just like he was a Matt Castle fan. And then Cam is back in Foxborough.
Nick?
No. The answer is no. Just go ahead, Jenna. I'm not responding to the lies about Matt Castle.
Okay, just want
to
make sure.
No.
Greg, let me ask you a question. When it comes to Cam Newton and the Patriots, don't Cam Newton and Bill Belichick both have something to prove? In that sense, wouldn't it be a good matchup for the two?
You know, I don't know if in that sense it would be a good matchup to prove, because Belichick has something to prove that's a little different than Cam. Belichick's something to prove is that he can win without Brady. And I think his proving that point would be better suited if he didn't have a quarterback like Cam Newton insert himself within that offense. Now, Cam, on the other half, you look at him and his situation, I agree with Wilds for, like, it's kind of wild that I'm even agreeing with Wilds. But if he comes in for a short stint, a year, maybe two, but a year pretty much would be it, and then resurges himself and really rehabilitates his ability to be this leader that all of a sudden no one thinks he can be, and this great talent that all of a sudden no one thinks he could be, and he potentially wins or goes deep into the playoffs with the Patriots, who we know is typically going to always be there, that would be huge for him. It would put winning back on the board. It would definitely show teams that he's willing to suppress whatever his agenda that they believe is just so bigger than the team, lay that to the side and just win and focus on football. But I think Cam Newton would be a phenomenal fit for the New England Patriots. Again, Bill Belichick's thoughts are probably a little different, but winning is all he cares about. And if he wants to win, Cam Newton, give that to him.
Nick, can't you see Cam Newton using this year almost like a bridge year going and spending a year in New England and then trying to land a big deal the year after that?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting idea. The problem for Cam would be that if he's really, really good in New England to try to go land a massive deal, the Patriots could then respond by franchise tagging him, like, oh, you're so good. Now you don't get a long-term deal. We're going to get you on a one-year, a second-year trial. So maybe you would have to work out some deal like Brady had where they can't franchise tag him. But I think that's really smart. And when I hear the other teams being tied to Cam, a team such as Jacksonville, if I'm Cam Newton and I think I have 5 to 8 more high-level years or 5 to 8 more years being a starting quarterback, he's only 30 years old, so that would put him right in line with the quarterbacks we see now. Wilds, as much as I hate to say it, like I said earlier, I'm an unbiased analyst, take my fan part out of it, I think 10 million super cheap for a quarterback. But I think 10 million in New England would be worth more for Cam than 25 million in Jacksonville. I truly believe that. And so I don't know if those would be the numbers, but I do think if you're Cam, you have to consider how long do I think I have and how do I have one more really big contract in me? And if so, what is the best place to set me up for it? Because that's probably not coming around this time around, Wilds.
I totally agree. I think, like, we're not talking about the NFL draft. It's not like, oh, he's going to go to the Chargers or the Dolphins. Like, where does he want to go? If I'm Cam Newton, I'm looking around. I'm an MVP. I'm a number one draft pick. I'm a Heisman Trophy winner. I'll decide where I want to go. And I can move my salary up and down depending on the situation. And if I'm Cam Newton, and we talked about this with Brady, if winning is your number one option, why not go to the winningest franchise in the NFL? It makes total sense to me, Jenna, that he heads to New England.
Yes, but New England was the winningest franchise in the NFL, perhaps because of the guy who's no longer on that team in Tom Brady. So I think Nick makes a good point that now you're starting fresh. There is no real style or fit or personality except whatever Bill Belichick mandates there. But keep in mind, guys, Cam Newton 2-0 against Bill Belichick. He knows that team. He plays well against that team. So maybe that is a plus for Bill Belichick to want to bring him in. Anything with that, Nick?
Well, Greg, let me ask you this. When you've played against a guy, like for the guys on the Patriots, the defenders on the Patriots, I feel like they assuredly, even though they practice against Stidham, and I don't have a ton of time here, but Greg, I want your thoughts on it. They have an air of respect for Cam that's different because he's in this league, right, Greg?
Exactly. You will immediately respect a guy who you've seen and quite honestly, who you've lost to. And Jenna, you said it. He's beat the Patriots twice. Not too many players can say that they've done that.
All right, let's take a slight turn here. We may not have an NBA season, but you know what we do have? We've got Nick Wright. And lucky for us, Nick spent the weekend watching all 239 of LeBron James' playoff games, which is funny because so did I. Unlike me, though, Nick made a list. Nick, my friend, take us through it.
All right, so here's the deal. Someone asked me, what are LeBron's 10 best playoff games? Where does the Detroit 48 special game rank? And I said to myself, you know what? That's a great question. We've got time here. So over the next 2 weeks, every day we're going to unveil one of LeBron's 10 best playoff games from 10 to 1. But in order to do that, we have to first mention the games that missed the cut. So what you're about to see is LeBron's 20 best playoff games that are not in his 10 best playoff games. So somewhere 11 to 30 are, and these are in chronological order. I'll go through some of these quickly. That first game you see, 32, 11, and 11, that was his first playoff game ever. First playoff game ever, 21 years old, how about a 30-point triple-double? That 2008 game, the next one, first game seven ever. The greatest game seven player other than Bill Russell in NBA history, gives you 45 points. That East semis against Atlanta, how about a 47, 12, and 8? No one even remembers it. Orlando, those two games in the same series, 49, 6, and 8. 37, 14, and 12, that game five facing elimination. 2010 East semis at game three at Boston, 38, 8, and 7. That was the series, remember, that he quit on the Cavs, his final series with the Cavs, dropped to 38, 8, and 7. That 40, 18, and 9, the next game, they were down 2-1. They hadn't won a title yet in Miami. They're without Chris Bosh. He drops 40, 18, and 9. That triple-double beneath it, that's how he won his first championship, triple-double game 5 of the finals. 30, 10, and 10 against Indiana, that was where he had the buzzer-beating layup to go up 1-0 in that series. 37-18 and 13. That Hawks team won 60 games. Give me the next 10 that didn't even make the top 10. I'll go through these a little bit quicker if we can. The next one, that's a game one against Golden State in the NBA Finals. A little 40 points. That's a game five in the same NBA Finals, a 40-point triple-double. That's the final game of those NBA Finals, 32-18 and 9. I remind you, the guy who guarded him that series won Finals MVP. Now we'll go to more recent times. A 41-point triple-double against Indiana to go up 3-0. How about in the finals against Golden State again, facing elimination, 41-13-8. And then the last time we saw him in the playoffs, that 46-12-5 included the game-saving block and the game-winning buzzer beater. And then in game seven, 45-8-7. The very next round, a 43-8-14. And then in the finals, two straight games against the Celtics facing elimination, down 3-2, 46-11-9 in 46 minutes. And then in game seven, 35-15-9 in all 48 minutes. So those are all games that are not in LeBron's 10 greatest ever. So let me give you his 10th greatest playoff game ever. It is one I think we all remember. Kevin Wilds was there. Game two of the 2015 finals at Golden State, a Warriors team that was 39-2 at home. They had lost Kyrie Irving. They had lost Kevin Love. And in overtime, LeBron gives you 39-16-11. And I remind you, in that game, a game the Cavs won, here are the Cavs who made a basket. Matthew Dellavedova, Iman Shumpert, Timofey Mozgov, J.R. Smith, and James Jones. And I'll remind you, the finals MVP for that series in that game had 7 points. So that's LeBron's 10th greatest playoff game ever. We'll give you 9-1 over the next 2 weeks. I appreciate you guys giving me the platform for it. But that's number 10, Jenna Wolf.
Nick, you and I had so much fun live FaceTiming while we watched all 239 games together. Oh, yeah. I want to do it again. Maybe this weekend or maybe next weekend.
Anytime.
We'll pick one. Coming up, why is Tua comparing football to badminton? That's next on First Things First. Remember when we were like, should we watch another one? You're like, yeah, let's watch another one. Okay, guys, time now to put a grade on it. Sponsored by Untuck It, shirts designed to be worn untucked. So Tua Tagovailoa's health has been a major concern heading into next week's draft. But the former Heisman runner-up, he's not worried. He said, quote, hey, I'm not playing badminton. I'm not on the swim team. Football's a physical sport. You're going to get hurt. That just comes with it. And it was just very unfortunate that I got hurt every season. It's part of the game. It's a contact sport. I can only control what I can control. I can't control that, or in other words, can't get hurt playing badminton, guys. Nick, put a grade on Tua Tagovailoa's prospect, draft prospect. Do you see what happened there? I took my glasses off.
I think you
see the word prospect.
Yeah, and you can't see. Right. The reason Jenna can't see is, ironically enough, suffered an eye injury playing badminton as a youth. They got the shuttle right in the eye, and it just ruined her.
It was my ring finger playing badminton.
Okay. I give Tua an A-plus draft prospect. And I want to defend Tua on this. I thought the former Chargers team doctor, who's a good Twitter follower, Dr. David Chow, made a really good point. It's fair to question how Tua is going to recover from the hip injury. It is not fair, however, to question, is he injury prone because he suffered that hip injury? If you go back and you watch that play, 100% of human beings would have suffered a catastrophic injury if they were hit the way he was hit, fallen on the way he was fallen on, with his foot planted the way it was. So I do think, I understand people being concerned about his level of recovery, but I don't think it's fair to be concerned, well, is that going to happen again? Because that right there would have happened to anyone. It's not because he has brittle hips or bad joints, Wilds. So it's not enough to scare me off of Tua. And so I still think he's an A-plus prospect because of character, because of talent, and because of production throughout his collegiate career against very, very tough competition, Wilds.
You know what, Nick? We used to work with, I used to work with Trent Dilfer. And Trent Dilfer's quote about Tua is mind-blowing, and I feel like it should be front page news everywhere. Here's the quote. Dilfer did the virtual pro day. Here's the quote. I've never been around a kid that throws it better. That's shocking. I feel like there should be no more debate on whether or not you should take Tua. Trent Dilfer has never been around a kid that throws it better. I don't know what there is left to debate. Greg, my mind is made up. If Nick is at A+, I'm at A++ plus several more pluses.
Yeah, I'm definitely at an A+. When I look at all the positives, and there are a ton of them, but I'll enhance the positives by looking at the negative first. We talk about his injury and his injuries and what he endured because of them. But when you look at why he got hurt and how he got hurt, it's because he changed this type of play that we were accustomed to seeing at Alabama, a team that was always looked at from a physical upfront, run the ball down your throat type of approach offensively. He completely changed the mold. And they went to a passing quarterback who we thought, oh, who is this guy? What is he going to do? Well, he's going to stand in the pocket, get hit, get beat up, but still stand in the pocket, scan, and go through his progressions, be accurate, throw the ball on with timing, be able to be elusive enough to extend the plays and still hit receivers down the field. This kid has done it all. And his to his point and credit, injuries are a part of the game. And unfortunately, he has suffered quite a bit of them. But I think at the collegiate level, the protection of the quarterback is not what it could be or will be when he gets to the professional level. They're going to put a huge onus on offensive linemen to protect a guy like Tua Tagovailoa, who has already been injured, but they understand what he provides if you protect him, just like any other quarterback, believe it or not, in the National Football League. If you protect Aaron Rodgers, is he special? Absolutely. If you don't, what does he look like? Any other quarterback. If you protect Pat Mahomes, is he special? If he's not, to say he's been injured, everyone's been injured. Everyone gets injured. Protect the kid, and he's going to produce.
What do we say is the best type of ability? Availability. And nowhere is that more true than in the NFL. All right, moving on. Time now for stories to start your morning. The NFL Competition Committee is voting to amend Rule 4, Section 3, Article 2, which, unless you've been living under a rock, is obviously the rule to prevent teams from manipulating the game clock by committing multiple dead ball fouls while the clock is running. Nick Wright, how you voting on this?
Listen, of course they should change this rule, but I'll be very fast here. Wilds, this is maddening. Belichick has been doing this for a decade, and the NFL does not care. It gets done to him once in the playoffs. They're like, gotta change the rule. And he's been doing it for a decade. Nobody cares. One time, he gets a taste of his own medicine, Wilds, and they're like, oh, gotta change the rule now. Wilds, it is an outrage. An out-and-out outrage.
No. No, you know what, Greg? The first person that does it is an innovator. The second person that does it is a copycat. We're talking about copyright infringement. I'd be okay with this if Belichick was the only person allowed to do it. It's because it's his copyright on this rule. But if everyone's going to be allowed to do it, then we should get rid of the rule. I support this.
Yeah, I'm quick too. I support it. And what's interesting is it was okay because it was only Belichick, but not just because it was only Belichick, because not everyone was as locked into the rules of the game. And he just is so intently focused on every little nuance of the game. He knew how to take advantage of it, and so did Vrabel.
All right, next up for Vote Guys, Rule 6, Section 1, Article 1. I have these memorized, but for you guys at home that don't, this one is the one that would provide an alternative to the onside kick with an option for a team that's trailing to run a 4th-and-15 play from your own 25. You know that one. Nick, you like this idea?
I love this idea for two reasons. One is the onside kick is going to become obsolete because of the new kickoff rules, so you have to adjust it. And the other is my quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, had a 132 passer rating on 3rd and 15s or longer. So why would the Chiefs ever kick off again, Wilds? Let's just go 4th and 15 every time. I don't know. It'd be like make it, take it in basketball. I don't know if the other team would ever get the ball. I love it, Wilds.
It would be like
let's
make it,
the
take
change,
it.
Baby. Yeah.
It wouldn't be like make it take it. I love this because I love the onside kick and the death of the onside kick. I think it's been a little sad to bring this back. I'm all in for it. I'm all for it. But it is not like make it take it for the Chiefs. We shouldn't fold the Chiefs into every story, Greg.
I like it for the reason of the probability of success. A successful 4th and 15 is probably a lot higher than the onside kick. So it gives the team an opportunity to get back into the game and keeps fans engaged until the clock hit 000. I love this idea.
Love it.
All right, let's finish on some basketball now. Steph Curry took to Instagram Live this weekend to tell JaVale McGee that he could score 60 points on everybody in the NBA. As the kids are saying, hashtag humble brag.
I know what's coming.
Greg, you agree with Steph?
Yeah, man. Look, let me tell you something. You get on IG, you turn into a different person. You're not going to sit here and tell the world, no, I can't score 60 on everyone. No, I can score 60 and put buckets on anyone that gets in front of me. However, with Steph, I do believe it's true with this today's National Basketball Association, the way they allow those guys, the lack of defense that they allow those guys to play. And his range, he steps across half court. He can shoot from anywhere. It's very possible.
Good, Nick. I'm going to throw you the alley-oop. I don't know if Steph could do it, but I know who can throw 60 on any team. Patrick Mahomes. Surely Patrick Mahomes could put 60 on every team in both leagues.
Yeah, you know, on a typical day, I might say that. And listen, on 364 days a year, if this story came up, I would point out that for Steph, a good first step to dropping 60 on everybody would be dropping 60 on anybody since he's never done it in his basketball life. But today is not a typical day, and I will tell you why. Because 7 years ago today, my life changed in an absolutely unbelievable way. 7 years ago today, I got married, and I would like to spend the final 15 seconds of the show saying to my wonderful wife, the greatest stylist in the world, Danielle Birdwright, thank you so very much, and a happy, happy anniversary. Steph could probably score 60 on her, but he'd probably need Draymond setting some picks. As far as the rest of the NBA, I'm not certain, but a happy anniversary, baby. Jenna Wolf, take it away.
Nick, happy anniversary.
And Danielle, very happy anniversary to you guys. We got to go. We are back here tomorrow morning. Stay healthy. Stay safe, everyone. See you then.